Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the January NJEDA Board Meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Attendees on Microsoft Teams should remain muted until it's their turn to speak. Please be advised, today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens a public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending in person will be acknowledged to speak first, then by Teams, and then by phone. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press star, then one on your telephone keypad to be placed into a queue to provide comment. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star, then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. I will now turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Mary, could you read the Open Public Meeting Notice, please?
Please. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger, the Bergen Record, and the Trentonian at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank you. Danielle, could you call the roll, please?
Chairman Terrence O'Toole?
Present.
Vice Chairman Charles Sarlow?
Here.
Bill Elagia?
Here.
Ed Dumont?
Here.
Chip Lever?
Present.
Jewel Antoine Johnson?
Here.
Seth Weinrich?
Here.
Aaron Cruz, representing the Executive Branch?
Here.
Commissioner Robert Acero Angela from the Department of Labor?
Here.
Daniel Paulino for Commissioner Justin Zimmerman from the Department of Banking and Insurance?
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean LaTourette from the Department of Environmental Protection?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Danielle. Let me give some brief chair remarks. First of all, good morning and welcome to the NJEDA's first board meeting of 2026, and Happy New Year to everyone. As we convene for the final meeting of the Murphy administration, I'd like to take a moment to recognize and thank our ex officio members, Commissioner Rob Saro Angelo, Commissioner Sean LaTourette, Commissioner Justin Zimmerman, Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo, and Aaron Cruz from the Governor's Authorities Unit. On a personal level, I want to say I've been inspired by your dedication to public service. As a citizen and taxpayer in the state of New Jersey, it gives me great confidence in our state government, so thank you. We're deeply grateful for your leadership, insight, and partnership over the years, and we wish you continued success in your future endeavors. As we reflect on the past 8 years under Governor Murphy, it's important to acknowledge the significant growth the EDA has seen across a number of areas, including manufacturing, innovation, and childcare. The state's GDP has grown by more than $69 billion, an 11% increase. The manufacturing industry has created 8,200 jobs in the state, new jobs in the state, helping establish New Jersey as the highest job growth state in the Northeast. Since June 2020, New Jersey has had a 23% job growth rate, 7% higher than the national average. Our investments in the innovation sector, including our strategic innovation centers, along with the state's world-class workforce, have led to a record number of new startups launching, nearly 130,000. As the SICs continue to open across the state, it will help drive new technologies and discoveries to help create long-term economic growth. More than $1 billion has been invested in the state's child care sector. Through the NJEDA Child Care Facilities Improvement Program, more than 670 child care facilities and home-based child care centers have received more than $125 million to make necessary upgrades, ensuring families across the state have access to safe and affordable child care center options. New Jersey's main streets are thriving again, due in part to the NJEDA support for small businesses, which has helped create nearly 75,000 new small businesses in the state since 2018. There are now more small businesses in the state than before the pandemic. Another notable area of growth has been real estate development, where the NJEDA has supported numerous housing and mixed-use projects throughout the state. Through initiatives such as the Aspire program, the NJEDA has invested more than $3.87 billion and tax credits to support the rehabilitation of existing structures and the development of long vacant properties. Since 2023, the Aspire program has helped create more than 7,000 housing units, 43% of which were affordable. Today, we will consider three Aspire items, including two mixed-use, mixed-income residential projects in Jersey City and the revitalization of the Monmouth Medical Center. Together, these projects will advance housing development, spur economic revitalization, expand access to critical services, and enhance community corridors. We're grateful to the Murphy administration's partnership over the past 8 years and look forward to continuing this important work under Governor-elect Mikey Sherrill and her administration. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Acting CEO Mary Maples for the CEO's report.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Chairman. Good morning, everybody, board members. Thank you all for being here. Just to add on to what the Chairman said this morning, it is our first meeting of 26, but the end of a story for the Murphy administration. And when you look back and think, what can you really accomplish in 8 years? Well, it turns out it's quite a lot. And it's thanks to the partnership that our team here at EDA has with our board members and with our stakeholders in the community. You look at almost $9 billion of program approvals over the course of the last 8 years, over 35,000 individual approvals. That's a 15-fold increase in the number of businesses we've supported annually since the start of the administration, more than 100 new programs. That's jaw-dropping and a ton of work. They're not all open today. Thankfully, no one would know what the heck is going on if there were, but that's a ton of work, and it's thanks to all the people you see in this room that are on the screen, that are in this building and our other offices around the state. So just a real round of applause and thanks to the team during the last 8 years who've been able to deliver on these priorities and objectives. And a very heartfelt thanks to our board members who've been so engaged. You make us better. You make us stronger. It is where I think really the magic of EDA comes to fruition. So thank you for that. And with that, let's get on with the show.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. The first item is to approve the previous month's minutes. There is one set of meeting minutes for approval today, 4 year minute from the December 15th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. I'm going to remind everyone when making a motion to please identify yourself and as well as seconding. Could I hear a motion to approve the December 15th NJEDA board meeting minutes, please?
Second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Second.
Weinrich.
Sorry. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. We're next going to move to the public comment section of the meeting. I will now open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I will ask Daniel Esser to share NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period will be acknowledged to speak first in person, then by Teams, and then by phone. Members of the public attending via Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Each person will be acknowledged to speak in order of hands raised. Once acknowledged, please unmute yourself to provide your comment. All members of the public must remain muted following the public comment portion of the meeting. A staff member may mute you if you are unable to remain muted. Members of the public attending by phone who are interested in providing comment will be advised to press star, then one, to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue to provide their comment. Now I'll share NJEDA's public comment policy, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A person may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there is enough time for all those who wish to speak. Related documents, printed comments, or materials may be attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comment at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. I will now acknowledge members of the public who wish to provide comment at this time. First, operator, anyone on the phone who wishes to speak.
Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question by pressing star, then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may please press star, then one at this time. One moment, please, for our first question. I have no questions at this time.
Okay, thank you, operator. Anyone on Teams with your hands raised? Okay, anyone in the room in person who would like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, I will consider the public comment section of the meeting closed. Next, we're going to move on to the voting items. Josh, do you want to give a quick incentives committee report?
Super. The NJEDA Incentives Committee met on January 5th and January 13th, discussed several actions coming to board today, including three tax credit applications. Staff will present these items today as part of the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. Okay, first up, we have three Aspire awards to consider. First, Annie Suero on the Monmouth Medical Center.
Board members, good morning, everyone. We are requesting board consideration of the following three items. First is approval of the transfer of up to $331.1 million in unreserved expired tax credits from the non-transformative project allocation to the transformative project allocation. The legislation allows for a transfer of up to $500 million per fiscal year at a 65-35% split between the northern and southern states. There's about $185 million left in the transformative bucket. And so the transfer would include no more than $215.2 million, which is 65%, awarded to transformative projects located in the northern bucket, which will help offset what we need for the current project, and no more than $115.8 million at 35% for the southern bucket. The second item is $400 million in expired tax credits for Monmouth Medical Center, Inc. And the last item is approval for 2 6-month extensions as allowed by statute to the date by when the project must be completed. The program rules require that a non-phase transformative project achieve project completion within 5 years following the execution of the incentive agreement. And with the two extensions, it allows for a maximum completion period of 6 years, which will allow the developer flexibility to meet their 84-month construction schedule. The transformative health service project, known as the Vogel Medical Campus, comprises the construction of an 8-story, 780,000-square-foot healthcare center, including the relocation of 252 acute care beds from the current Long Branch site, as well as associated surface parking areas, internal roadways, pedestrian walkways, infrastructure improvements, and landscaped open spaces. The applicant is wholly owned by its parent company, RWJ Barnabas Health, Inc., which is also the lead developer on the project. It is a nonprofit organization healthcare system that has a real estate division responsible for constructing, managing, developing, and expanding its physical footprint, including facilities, leasing, ambulatory care centers, medical office buildings, and other property-related activities. The total development cost of the project is about $1.488 billion, and to determine the appropriate award amount, ineligible costs under statute and program rules were excluded, resulting in a total of the whole project cost of about $1.481 billion. The required developer equity contribution of 20% is about $297 million. In this case, the developer is contributing $508 million, meeting the minimum requirement. The project financing consists of two sources. One is an internally financed loan at $950 million, and the remaining balance is in equity. We evaluated the applicant's request in accordance with the program's applicable award caps. As a transformative project located in Fenton Falls, it's eligible to receive up to 50% of total eligible costs, or $400 million. The project is not subject to a net benefit test, as it is the healthcare center that is located in Allman that was formerly owned by the federal government. This is Aspire's first health care center transformative project. It's an owner-occupied project with Monmouth Medical as the sole tenant. The program's financing gap analysis is based on a financing of real estate development projects, expenses and revenues from a developer-landlord's perspective. We analyzed a hypothetical financial model that assumed a typical developer arrangement with a commercial tenant to determine if there is a financing gap. We used the maximum rate of return analysis provided by JLL, and with the benefit of the tax credit, the equity IRR is 17.2, which is below the max rate for comparable healthcare developments of 20%. Though the project is not required to meet a minimum job creation threshold, though there will be 2,241 permanent jobs as part of the expanded Monmouth Medical Center between both Pitt and Falls and the Long Branch locations. Of this, 1,963 are existing and 278 will be new permanent jobs. It's expected that the mobile medical campus will ultimately support at least 500 jobs as part of its full build-out and part of the larger, broader development. Per the program rules, a commercial transformative project has to meet the special economic importance requirements. The applicant has submitted a certification that the project is directly associated with both an academic, medical, and research institution and a National Cancer Institute designated comprehensive cancer center. Rutgers Cancer Institute is the entity responsible for the oncology service line at Monmouth Medical and also at the cancer center at the Vogel Medical Campus. And the cancer programs operate within the clinical, academic, and research framework between Rutgers and RWJ Health. Additionally, under an affiliation agreement in place since 2018, Rutgers University provides leadership for academic research and educational mission of RWJ Health, satisfying the requirement. Also, the applicant has received a certificate of need from the State Department of Health on January 8th, approving the relocation of Monmouth Medical from its existing facility in Long Branch to the proposed site in Sitting Falls. Based on these factors, staff is recommending board approval for the transfer of the funds in the amount of $331.1 million, the Aspire tax credit in the amount of $400 million, and the two-month extensions for the project completion. Happy to take any questions at this time.
Thanks, Annie. Just to underscore a couple of things that Annie said, this is the first use of a recent provision change in the Aspire legislation that happened last summer that designates this type of a healthcare facility as a facility of special economic importance. So it is first, but not the last, certainly, of projects of this type. And the team worked very hard with JLL to make sure we were looking at it through the right lens.
This is the first hospital we've mm-hmm. done under Aspire.
Yeah, not for its healthcare facility.
We did a small one in New York.
Right, in FDHC, right.
Any comments or questions we're going to go to? Are we going to go to the economic analysis next? Or is that?
No.
No? Okay.
No, sorry.
All right. So any, it's in the memo that people have received. Any comments or questions? Anyone in the room? Anyone on the phone? Any board members comment?
Motion to approve, Angela.
Brett Dumont, second.
I'm assuming there are no questions, then.
Thanks for answering.
Okay, so we've heard, did you guys get that, a motion in a second? All right, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the award is approved. Congratulations.
Thanks,
Annie. All right, next, Deirdre, on two items related but separate for Jersey City.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We are seeking approval to award $75,852,550 in Aspire tax credits for a mixed income residential project located in Jersey City at 900 Garfield Avenue 1A in the Canal Crossing redevelopment area. The applicant is Garfield Phase 1A Urban Renewal LLC is proposing the new construction of a six-story building with 215 rental units, including studios, one- and two-bedroom units, and includes approximately 6,818 square feet of ground floor retail space. The unit mix includes 172 market-rate units and 43 units designated as affordable, making the project an 80-20 split of market-rate and affordable. It will also include a 24-hour concierge, lounge, full-service amenities, including a fitness, yoga room, outdoor deck with pool, barbecue stations, and a full gymnasium. The site will also include 73 parking spaces. Ownership of the applicant is represented by a single-purpose entity, Garfield 1A Urban Renewal LLC, which is solely owned by Garfield 1A Member LLC, which is solely owned by Garfield 900 Garfield JV LLC, jointly owned by BOC 4D Holdings LLC at 95% and 900 Garfield Developer LLC at 5%. The lead development entity is Barai Development, which was established in 1972 and specializes in the development of large-scale public-private mixed-income housing in urban municipalities of New Jersey. The firm develops, leases, and manages its own properties. Two recent projects approved by the board for this developer were 11 Spring Street in New Brunswick on September 10th of 2025 and 930 MacArthur Highway in Newark on March 7th. 2024. For this applicant, legal reviews and sister agency checks have cleared. The co-applicant is Elizabeth Development Corporation, and they will be providing services to the residents and also be the recipient of the Aspire tax credits according to the program rules. Next slide, please. The total development cost is $142,659,380. And to help size the award, we excluded costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules, including land and development fee, which brings the total eligible project cost to $126,420,917. The required developer equity contribution is 20% and is equal to $28,513,876. And in this case, the developer is contributing $29,095,907, meeting the minimum requirement. We subject the applicant's request to the program's various award caps, and since the project is located in an eligible incentive track, it is eligible to receive up to 60% of total eligible cost, or $90 million, whichever is less, and is how we arrive at the previously mentioned award of $75,852,550. To help further size the award, we looked at the project's rate of return. In this case, we used the maximum rate of return model provided by JLL, and with the benefit of the Aspire tax credit, the equity IRR is 3.34%, which is below the maximum return for comparable multifamily residential units developed in Jersey City of 15.37%. Based on these factors, we are recommending an Aspire award of $75,852,550 for board approval. And if approved, the project construction will begin in April of 2026 and take approximately 36 months to complete. Happy to take any questions at this time.
Any questions in the room? Again, this developer is, we've done at least two other projects with them.
Yeah.
MacArthur's up, right?
It's, yeah.
Yeah. Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Remove.
Thanks,
Kyle.
Second. Thank you, Elizabeth. Any further questions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved.
Thank you. For the next project, we are seeking approval to award $90 million in Aspire tax credits for a mixed-income residential project located in Jersey City at 900 Garfield Avenue 1B, also in the Canal Crossing redevelopment area. The applicant, Garfield Phase 1B Urban Renewal LLC, is proposing the new construction of a 5-to-10-story building with 293 rental units, including 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units. This also includes approximately 11,689 square feet of ground floor retail space. The unit mix for this building includes 234 market rate units and 59 units designated as affordable, making this project an 80-20 split of market and affordable. Building 1B also includes a 24-hour concierge, pool, lounge, yoga rooms, fitness rooms, and barbecue stations, etc. But this site has underground parking for 212 parking spaces. Ownership of this applicant is represented by a single-purpose entity, Garfield Phase 1B Urban Renewal LLC, which is solely owned by Garfield's Phase 1B member LLC and owned also by 900 Garfield's JV LLC, which is jointly owned by BOZ 4D Holdings LLC at 95% and 900 Garfield Developer at 5%. The lead development entity is on this deal, Orion Development, and as just mentioned, they have done several deals with the NJEDA and have also cleared separate legal reviews and sister agency checks for this project as well. The co-applicant on this deal is also the Elizabeth Development Corporation, which will be providing services to the residents and will be the recipient of the Esquire tax credits according to program rules. Next slide, please. For this development, the total cost of development is $177,590,802. And to help size the award, we excluded costs that are prohibited by statute program rules, including land and developer fees. And that brings the total eligible cost to $159,114,320. The required developer equity is 20% and is equal to $35,518,160. And in this case, the developer is contributing exactly $35,518,160, which is the minimum requirement. We subject the applicant's request to programs, rules, and various board caps, and since the project is in an eligible incentive track, it is eligible for up to 60% of an Esquire award or $90 million of the total eligible cost, which is whichever is less. And in this case, the $90 million is less, and that is how we arrived at the $90 million. So to further help size the award, we looked at the project's rate of return. And in this case as well, we used the maximum rate of return model provided by JLL. And with the benefit of the Esquire tax credit, the equity IRR is 4.21%, which is below the minimum for comparable multi-family residential projects in Jersey City of 15.37%. Also, if this project is approved, construction will commence in April of 26 and take approximately 36 months to complete. And so we are recommending an Esquire award of $90 million for approval. And that concludes my presentation.
Deirdre, I know we talked about this in committee, but is there any reason why they were done separately?
Well, I will say that we haven't spoken specifically as to why, but when applicants apply to Esquire, they plan well in advance. And these are two separate projects by way of financing,
okay,
permitting, and things of that nature. And we've done enough due diligence to confirm that they are two separate projects. Okay.
Including through the local redevelopment agency.
Absolutely.
Doing these,
yeah,
okay. Projects.
All right, good. And they're next to each other, essentially, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, they're on
the yeah. Anyone in the room have questions or comments? Is 1A and 1B intended to be phased, or do you think they're going to start at the same time?
They're intended to start at the same time. The developer has stated that the construction will commence in April for both projects.
Thank you. Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve? Thanks, Elizabeth. Second.
Roger, second.
Phil on that one. All right. Thank you, Phil. Hearing no further questions, could I we'll take a vote? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved.
Thank you.
All right, next on to Brownfield. Susan on Sarahville Seaport Associates.
Good morning. So this is a familiar name, but perhaps not as familiar a program that we're going to talk about today. I just wanted to give you a brief overview of the Brownfield Contaminated Site Remediation Act program. It actually dates back to the early 2000s when it was managed by Commerce and then came over to EDA in about 2008. The nature of the program is a cash reimbursement to developers to incent them to take on these dirty brownfield sites, clean them up, and install businesses operating on that that can provide tax revenues to the state. The awards are up to 75% of the actual remediation cost as certified by DEP. And this presents an agreement that's actually signed by EDA, the developer, and the treasurer, since taxation manages those disbursements yearly. I think we can pop to the next slide, please. So this particular project, as I said, is familiar to you. This is Airville Seaport Associates. They are the project that received the $400 million Aspire grant a couple years back, or award a couple years back.
Which we think of as Riverton.
We think of as Riverton around the halls, yes.
Or Bath Pro Shop.
Sure. The brownfield itself is about 410 acres, 250 acres of which is this Aspire that you're all familiar with. And as you mentioned, they've been ongoing and getting some of that upright, and that's great to see. So back years and years and years ago, late 90s, National Lead was operating there. National Lead is who we all think of as Dutch Boy Paints. They were creating dyes there and other chemicals. And as they exited the site, there's lots of concern as to how the site would be remediated. There were about $40 million of estimated costs at the time for remediation, but it was understood at the time there was limited exposure to the site and there really wasn't full site investigation work available at the time. So that was the best number that could come up with. That number served to be the good faith estimate as folks entered into this brownfield award. The program allowed, as I said, 75% of remediation costs. So this award was granted with 75% of that $40 million, about $30 million in cost to be reimbursed the developer once the whole thing was complete. To catalyze the efforts at the site, DEP also approved four $5 million tranches of HGSRF grants at the time. That was a kind of a shot in the arm to get the whole thing started. Remediation efforts have been happening nonstop for the last 15 years there. At this point, costs have skyrocketed to expected $169 million all in by the time they're complete. So Sayreville Seaports has come in and asked first to increase that amount and also recognize that in the agreement terms, there was a need for the first $10 million in tax revenues to sort of be squirreled away just as an insurance policy to make sure the whole site was clean. At this point, there's a lot of confidence. They've spent $139 million to date. We agree that that's not necessary at this point. And we agree with their request to replace that provision with the requirement that the licensed site remediation professional would provide us a certification that all remedial efforts, but for those that relate to the construction cap, would be done before that $10 million would be released. So I hope I tied that together. I know there's a lot of history in here. I don't want to I certainly have a lot of details I'm happy to explore in here. But staff has looked at this and recommends that that escrow be removed and replaced as asked for. And in order to address the concern for more state support needed here, under consultation with DEP, we looked back at those HD grants. They were grants written as such, and it makes sense to align the agreement to recognize that fact and not require the $20 million in tax revenues to be diverted to the DEP fund, but rather go back to the developer.
And DEP is comfortable with this.
Let's get it done.
By the way, that was a great explanation because this is complicated.
Any questions I can answer?
The escrow, I'm sorry, Chair. Yeah. The escrow, that was just required the negotiation, or is that required by statute to actually have an escrow?
It was negotiated in this particular contract. It's not something we've seen in other brownfield award contracts. And I think it was a sign of the times. So it was a very contentious moment to try to get National Lead at its site, try to get something going there. And DEP certainly was at the table, very concerned to make sure this all got done. But they've been a brownfield development area designee for a long time. So DEP is actively participating quarterly, and I've gotten a chance to sit through a few of those meetings with them. To really know what's going on this site, and they show confidence that this will certainly will get done.
Thank you. This is
site.
That is. I wanted to give you a flavor. The rendering at the bottom was what you saw presented to support the Aspire. But as of now, we have the shell of Bass Pro up, and this was even maybe a month ago. I don't know if you all have driven up near the Driscoll Bridge, but it is a mammoth structure. I joke it looks like you're coming upon the Great Wolf Lodge. It's just a really giant, giant building. But it's really, really exciting to see. It's been a lot of years in the making. I know that we hear projects that say that often here, but this has been decades. So the community is really, really excited to see that, and we're really looking forward to seeing how it all takes shape.
So we are really amending the agreements in line with the original spirit of the agreement, perhaps. And the developer has spent $100 million plus more than this on remediation.
More, absolutely.
With possibly more to go. Okay, any questions, comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments?
Second motion.
Yes.
There we go.
You must have plenty to get. Second?
Fred Dumont will second it.
All right, Fred, we'll take that as a second. Any further questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none is approved again. Thank you for explaining a complicated matter. All right, I'm going to give a quick policy committee report. The NJADA's policy committee met on January 6th and considered several items which were being presented for action today, including funding allocation for the previously approved New Jersey Business Acceleration and Soft Landing Ecosystem, or NJ Base, and multiple hearing officer recommendations regarding appeals of declinations under the New Jersey Filmworks Program. First, on legal affairs, Marcus, on the Filmworks declination recommendations.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Today we have four Filmworks appeals. The first we'll start with is Black Belt Country Productions. This applicant was declined after receiving a total score of 73, which is below the 80-point threshold required to qualify. The appeal makes two primary arguments. The first is that there were significant deviations in scoring by one reviewer compared to others, particularly with regard to criteria two, the ability to serve overburdened communities, and criteria three sub A, the ability to provide wraparound services and low and no cost training. And the second is improper consideration of union affiliation, which the applicant claimed was irrelevant to the non-union positions targeted by its program. The appeal cited extensive outreach strategies and partnerships with organizations in Newark, East Orange, and Jersey City, as well as detailed wraparound services such as transportation, meals, stipends, child care referrals, mental health resources, and job placement supports. The applicant also argues that penalizing for lack of union ties was factually incorrect because roles like production assistants and assistant editors are non-union positions typically. With regard to the first argument, I found that the divergent scoring among reviewers is permissible and does not by itself indicate any error. It is not per se unreasonable that one reviewer might weigh the same set of facts differently than the others. That assertion alone is not evidence that reviewers' scores are unsubstantiated. In fact, reviewers' two scoring comments reflect an understanding of the scoring rubric as those comments specifically address parts of it. It may very well be true that reviewer two's perception of the facts drawn from the application differs from that of the other reviewers, but there is no indication that reviewer two's understanding of the scoring rubric or application or the facts was in any way deficient. The reviewer's comments indicate an understanding of the substance of the rubric and the application, resulting in their own reasoned opinion. With respect to the applicant's second argument, that the reviewer's comments and scores reflect a fundamental misunderstanding of the occupation at the center of their program, the rubric explicitly allows preference for employment of union or guild-affiliated instructors under certain criteria. More specifically, criteria 4 sub B allows for awarding more points if the program employs union or guild instructors, not program participants. The applicant misunderstood this distinction and provided no evidence that instructors could not be unionized. The evaluation process adhered to EDA's methodology. The reviewer's comments were consistent with rubric standards, and the applicant, I don't believe, met its burden to justify reversal. Accordingly, the recommendation is to uphold the original declination and reject this appeal.
Marcus, can I just interrupt for one second to remind everybody, because we discussed this in committee, these are about the program itself, right? So this is these are awards to entities who will then build, create training programs, workforce development for people in the film industry. Right, just so everybody has the context. And we had a process.
Matrix.
It was very detailed. It was one of the better ones I've seen, to be honest. My Hero Pictures is next. This applicant failed to meet the minimum score of 80 points, having scored a 42.67. After receiving the declination letter, the applicant submitted its appeal, which it later supplemented after having been provided with its score sheets. The applicant argues that the reviewers overlooked or undervalued critical elements of the proposal of its proposal, including its multi-phase program structure, cohort support mechanisms, workforce placement partnerships, budget sustainability plan, and management capacity. The applicant also pointed to references in its submission regarding in-kind support and partnerships intended to sustain programming beyond the grant term, as well as the leadership team's professional experience in project management. Upon consideration of this appeal, I determined that, among other things, these assertions did not demonstrate alignment with the scoring rubric. For example, the appeal's first point heading, program structure and operational plan, does not comport with any of the scoring criteria. Furthermore, though the applicant states that its application included information related to each of the identified areas, the nature of a competitively scored program requires the applicant provide the requisite detail so that reviewers can analyze the application under the scoring criteria and award a higher score where warranted. For example, under criteria 5 regarding budget sustainability, the applicant received minimal scores from all three reviewers, which correspond to the budget aligning with the proposed program in some areas, but having a limited plan for sustainability. Conversely, the review confirmed that certain strengths of the application were appropriately recognized as well, such as with criteria 4B regarding the employment of instructors with experience. Here, the applicant earned above average and best scores for utilizing instructors with current real-world industry experience, including those with union and guild affiliations as contemplated in the rubric. This demonstrates that the reviewers fully reviewed the application submission and evaluated it accordingly. I believe the evaluation process was fair and consistent, and the applicant did not meet its burden to justify reversal. Accordingly, with this one, I also recommend to uphold the original declination and reject this appeal. Flick Studios. The applicant was designed for not meeting the 80-point requirement, having scored a 54.07. The appellant generally argues that the original evaluation may not have fully recognized the strengths of its outreach strategy, its history of delivering creative-based training, and its alignment with the EDA's goals for equity and workforce development. The appeal identified three broad points. Number one, alignment with key evaluation criteria. Two, its ability to meet industry needs. And three, its ability to service overburdened communities. However, these arguments largely reiterated the application's content without identifying any scoring errors or procedural irregularities. For example, the applicant argued that its recruiting strategy should have merited full points for serving overburdened communities and that its training program strongly aligned with industry needs. The applicant did not provide evidence that the reviewers acted arbitrarily, capriciously, or unreasonably, nor did it demonstrate that the reviewer comments or scores were inconsistent with the rubric. I found that the appeal generally amounted to a request for reconsideration rather than a substantive challenge to the scoring process. The applicant was provided with its scoring sheets and offered an opportunity to supplement its appeal, but elected not to do so. The applicant failed to establish or even identify any grounds for overturning the declination. I found that the scoring process was transparent and consistent. Accordingly, the recommendation is to uphold the original declination and reject this appeal. Last one, KBOT. The applicant was declined due to all available funding having been allocated to higher scoring applicants. So they did meet the 80, but there was nothing left after the funding was exhausted to higher scoring applicants. In its appeal, KBOT asserts three principal strengths: guaranteed job placement for graduates through owned productions and a verified filmmaker network, complete vertical integration from training to distribution, ensuring a sustainable employment pipeline, and three, alignment with community needs, minority leadership, and a proven track record with EDA programs. The applicant's arguments, while highlighting its program merits, did not allege any procedural errors, scoring irregularities, or bias. Instead, it reiterated information largely contained in its original application, and the appeal presents as a request for reconsideration. No irregularities or evidence of improper action were identified. The appeal fails to establish any substantive grounds for reversal. Accordingly, again, the recommendation is to uphold the declination and reject this appeal.
Everybody, they all had opportunities to respond. Some did, some didn't. You consider them.
Yes.
What happens from here, if assuming the board supports Marcus? Is there a further appeal process? Or?
Not within EDA. They would have to go to court to the appellate division. And as a reminder, each one needs a separate vote.
Okay. Okay. Any questions or comments for Marcus? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? We'll go through these one at a time. Okay, so the first is to uphold the hearing officer's recommendation as to K-Vibe Productions' appeal of its decline for participation. All those in favor signify by saying, oh, I'm sorry. Need a motion? Thank you. Second? Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? The hearing none, the recommendation is upheld. Second, hearing officer's recommendation as the Black Belt Country Productions appeal of its decline. Could I hear a motion to approve?
Second.
Fred Dumont, second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Or abstentions? You're hearing none, the motion is to recommendation is upheld. Third, hearing officer's recommendation as to Click Studios appeal. Could I hear a motion to approve?
Angelo.
Thank you, second. We'll take Fred as a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? But hearing none, the recommendation is upheld. And finally, hearing officer's recommendation as to the My Hero Pictures appeal. Could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion. Language.
Thank you. Second. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? But hearing none, the recommendation is upheld. Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you.
All right, next on authority matters, Andrew Gross, Director of International Innovation on the funding source for NJ Base.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Obviously, I'm coming back this morning on NJ Base to request board approval to use real estate project fund appropriation instead of the previously approved appropriation for this. As we know, the New Jersey Business Acceleration and Soft Landing Ecosystem, also known as NJ Base, is an EDA-led initiative designed to attract and support international companies and entrepreneurs looking to enter the U.S. market. We're planning to have, as we know from previous approvals, about 15 to 20 companies enter New Jersey per year from countries around the world. Back in June and September, of last year, the board approved $3,639,990 for NJ Base. That included a three-year lease and improvements costs, which was $902,165. Fixtures and equipment at $385,825, and a three-year contract with our selected operator SOSA at $2,352,000. So these costs, again, were allocated from our operating budget. We are now requesting that these funds instead be drawn from the state fiscal year 2023 appropriation for real estate project funding, which has $5.7 million in uncommitted funds. Of course, this has been confirmed by our finance team. They've taken a look at this. So the objectives of NJ Base, of course, are aligned with the intent of the real estate project funds. And this change will free up the operating budget for other expenses needed across the authority. So staff recommends the board approve the $3,639,990 from the Real Estate Project Fund appropriation as the updated funding source for NJ Base. Thanks so much.
What's the timing of actually getting the site up and running?
So the two-part question. The site itself will be ready, I think, in about 30 days, and the applications we're looking at about somewhere about 30 to 60 days to actually start taking applications.
So just to kind of summarize what this does, with this we have state appropriations to fully fund the operation of the new base facility for 3 years, and that's consistent with the budget that we did adopt for calendar year 2026. And gets us off to the races. So what Andrew's talking about as far as applications would be the mechanism for opening the doors to those international companies to come in, SOSA, and see how they fit within the program guidelines, which this board also approved last year.
Absolutely.
We should be, knock on, if this is wood, ready to fully launch NJ Base with no further board action needed for a while.
Yes, my name is. The facility is in Jersey City?
Yes, located 3 Second Street, right on the waterfront.
Okay, any questions, comments in the room, questions or comments on the phone? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve? Thanks, Josh. Second?
Elijah, second.
Thank you, Phil. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
If those recusals or abstentions, okay, hearing none, it is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary, you want to do board memoranda?
Sure. So in your package, for FYI, there are 2 memoranda. One is our community development delegated authority approval summary for Q4 of 25, and the other is the real estate division's lease and rights of entry summary for Q3 of 25. Just a couple of things to highlight, especially from the community development report. You'll see that under our small business improvement grant program, we had a total of $5.2 million of funding awarded across 156 applications. And then with the lease grant, another $1.8 million across 65 applications. Under the Main Street Acquisition Support Grant, we had $500,000 awarded across 15 applications. And with AC Revitalization, Phase 2, 2 applications for a total of $3 million. So more in your package for reading pleasure. Thank you.
Great, thanks. Okay, I would now like to request a motion to enter executive session to discuss a couple.
in public session.
We're back in public.
We rejoined?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Hi. And he's moving over on Teams. Thank you so much for your patience today with our technical. Confirm that you have everybody back in the room. He said they can hear it. They can hear us on the phone. Can you check on
yeah,
to make sure everybody's back in the room?
All right, so now we're in public session.
What about this one?
Andrew,
there's a second. Hi. Would you confirm that? Please
have
edited.
Do you oppose the approval or extension? You're hearing on the item.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and using Verizon Conferencing Services. You may now disconnect.